Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Warren flashed it. Vader might have some words for him.
Rip this right, the band-aid right off. I think that's the best way to do this.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see. I can see nothing going wrong here at all, but... I think, is it my turn to do the intro since Bender did it last time, which was great, by the way. Got a lot of good feedback about that.
There it is. Yeah. I think you are correct. You're up for it.
Well, hey, welcome to the Bro Chat here again for yet another round. It's fun to have these conversations. I think people are enjoying them. I have a few listener questions that popped in from Patreon that I know they're like hearing your guys' opinion and your answers because you're smarter than me. But it's exciting today because we have Flash McVay joining us. So, Flash, this is not a setup at all. Can you tell us about yourself?
I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah, it's not
a setup. I was going
to. Yeah. No, we're really serious. We really want you to tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I've been told that before as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
But until I get told to sit down, I'll go ahead. But Flash McVay out here at Hill Air Force Base, same squadron as Bender and the Snakes out here. Background that nobody cares about, Academy, UPT of Laughlin, A-10s, for a little while that was going away, Vipers at Osan, then Shaw, and then, transition over the F-35, was at Nellis for about 3.5 years and then separated last June, which is where we are now up at Hill.
Boom. That might be the first time anyone's ever answered the, tell me about yourself. So, Quite a career.
Oh, dang, I knew it.
Well, no one yelled at you, so you're fine. For those who are listening, usually when someone wants to tell you about yourself, I would not recommend doing that at Fighter Squadron. But no, Flash has an awesome career. I mean, dude, the fact that like A-10s, Vipers, F-35, weapons school instructor, it's pretty awesome. So it's cool to have you on here. And I don't know, I think we just kick it off. I wanted to kind of toss around some of the listener questions. So I had some Patreon supporters that reached out. I asked if they have any questions. I told them Flash is going to be on here, obviously with Vader and Bender. And people asked some questions. And I should say, actually, we need to circle back to our last bro chat. I had someone chime in from the B2 community because I might have said, some make-believe things about the B2. But they don't have a lawn chair, apparently, which I thought they had a lawn chair in the back. They have an air mattress and a sleeping bag, which also sounds terrible for a 36-hour flight. And they get to choose if they want to put their nugget next to the pisser or the hot air vent. And they don't have to wear helmets the entire time either. Oh, there's nice. Certain altitude restrictions and things like that, but they can use Bose headsets in non-critical phases of flight. So there you go. I didn't know that about the B2. You guys, I don't know, Flash probably did, but the rest of us didn't, so... That was clearing up some admin from last time. So kicking off here with the first question, and we did talk about this a little bit in text, but William Tunsell, he asked, this question is for all you guys. if you were starting your flying careers in 2022 and had the option of choosing your aircraft, would you guys choose a different aircraft to start your Air Force career? I'm an aspiring Air Force pilot through OTS. And if I were to choose, I'd go with the Mighty Viper and then later transition to F-35. F-35 is amazing, and the Mighty Viper is just too great to pass up. So I think that's a perfect question for Flash, given his background. So Flash, you have the talking stick.
All right. I think if I had to do it all, if I had to do it all over again, like the easy answer is to say I'd do it the exact same. But really looking back on it, if I was starting now, it'd be the F-35. Personally, I just think that as far as the mission sets, I still see it as my favorite mission set. I got to do that in the Viper, still get to do that in the F-35. So at the same time, if you're looking to do that mission set, then now you're kind of leapfrogging. We're in that bridge between the F-4 and the F-16. We're now in that same transition period from the F-16 to the F-35, kind of on a technological advancement. So if you had to choose, when you look back on kind of the history of that, would you have chosen to go fly the F-4 or would you have chosen the F-16? And so on this one, I would go with the F-35, just based off the opportunities that it kind of gets you and the stuff that you get to do and all the things that made me a really terrible F-16 pilot, kind of get hidden, a little bit. So I would, if I was starting all over again, knowing what I know now, of course, I would jump into the F-35. I'm already there, but, at the moment, but I would do that. I would start there. Flying the A-10 was super cool though. But as far as the things they're trying to do, the work that they have to do, to get themselves into certain arenas and into certain discussions, it's just not cool at the moment. So
yeah, that's a good perspective. And then there's Vader, who just completely went the opposite direction and regressed to the Eagle. So good job there, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what I was thinking, but the but yeah, I would say the same thing as Flash. Is I mean, it all depends on where you want to be. You know, if you want to be a part of the fight and actually be in the conversations and in the real fights rather than just like a JASM truck and just going up and shooting some JASM and going home, like the 35 is the place to be. I'd say maybe the Raptor, just because it seems like that'd be a sweet airplane to fly for a couple of years. But yeah, I think that's the thing.
Yeah, for sure. Bender, would you change anything?
I'd fly the Viper first, just because everybody else said the F-35. So it is a more fun airplane to fly. But the one thing that you do kind of have to take into account is like you have a pretty small window when you're combat like line fighter pilot. You know what I mean? So you maybe get 6 good years of, you know, being in the fight, and then unless you're Flash, and then you could probably do it for, you know, 30 years. But guys like me, like I'll be like top 3 maybe for the first week of any big fight if they even bring me at all. So yeah, you might not want to. I don't know. The Viper's awesome. So, and you learn so much by not having all the sensors and all the SA that like the F-35 has. So I think, I mean, it'd be really fun. I think you learn to be a better pilot as a baseline, and then I'd get into the F-35 because you're right. That's where the fight's going to be. Not that you necessarily want to be on the leading edge of whatever fight happens next. We could maybe talk about that later. But you at least want to be in like the 4th or 5th wave.
I'm going to try to find my night 2 sweet spot. Like that's going to be that's what I'm shooting for. I don't want to be the leading edge. I'll take that top 3 on the first night or in the NPC. And then that night 2 sweet spot, that's where I want to live.
Yeah, you can go let someone else be a hero. And, you know, it's good to learn from others, I think. Smart. That's sage wisdom right there.
Yeah, and it makes total sense because we all know how red flags go. The first day, it's always like some, you know, OCA or some sweep. And then the day 2 and 3, it's like some personnel rescue vol. And you're like, I know exactly how these people ended up on the ground. You know, they kicked down the door.
Yeah, you don't always want to be first. Also, I don't know if being second actually might be the smart thing either, because the card's been shown. But another discussion. I think this leads into – there are a lot of, like, seed F-35 questions. So this is the perfect group for it. Another question is, how can the F-35 do the Wild Weasel mission, the F-16 CJ, which CM now, but does it so well? So Flash, can you allude to that? Maybe why the F-35 is the future?
It's interesting. This conversation happens all the time. Like, you wear the weasel patch and all this different stuff, and the history behind it and the sacredness, if that's even a word, of the mission is still there. And I abide by that wholeheartedly. And I'm very, very protective of people who get to wear that patch. And I'm very selective of people who should get to wear that patch, because of the history. But when you look at it, is weaseling to me is not necessarily shooting rockets and guns at SAMs and killing them and getting shot at purposefully so people don't get shot at anymore, because that's not the game anymore. That was the game back in Vietnam when it was against S-75s, also known as SA-2s, and stuff like that. But when you're looking at some of the threat systems now, is the same things that they were doing back then in the 60s and early 70s is what we're doing now. It's just different. And so the F-35, like, when you look at some of the threat systems that you have and the technological advances that other threat countries have made, is those guys back then were just getting inside of the kill chain, or the kill web, if you will, and the thought process of the people that were trying to shoot them down were doing the exact same thing. However, instead of just one dude turning hand cranks inside of an SA-2, it's now a dude operating the data link and the battle management nodes and all these different things. And you're using multiple different domains to do it. And now when you're looking at it, it's more of a thinking humans ball game, versus just like the straight up, you can out athlete the other team. And so, like, that's kind of the weaseling that it happens in 2022 and beyond. Why the F-35 can do that so well is because you can somewhat negate and degrade a certain component of an IADS just by being low observable and stealth. Not all of it, obviously. But as far as like the humans that are doing the weasel mission, then they're just the people that are supposed to be the most knowledgeable on how to dissect an IADS. And that's what people are doing. And what we're doing is we are teaching F-35 pilots to do that, to integrate space, integrate cyber, integrate airborne and ground-based degraders of an IADS and things of that nature. And they're just teaching F-35s to be the master integrators of that, which they were teaching F-16 guys to do that, and they still are. But as far as like the future going in for the F-35 taking over the mantle of the weasel mission, it's the same thing that those guys did back in the day, and then the Viper did, and then it is now. It's just as the technological advances of the threat countries progress, so does our capabilities and the ability to negate those and potentially mitigate some of those factors. And the F-35 is just the next step. That's all it is. It's not any better than the guys who fly the F-16. Or they were at what they did, because they were amazing at it and are amazing at it. But it's just the next step. And you just have to kind of pick up that mantle and run, and you don't get a choice as you are in the F-35 now on whether you want to weasel or not. And that's my two cents on it.
Which, for those listening and don't know Flash, like, his two cents really count a lot. And while he was very hesitant about his, tell me about himself.
I absolutely hate you guys.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, I mean, you have a little bit of seed experience, and I know you were, again, hesitant to lead in with that, because we set you up. It's a minefield when we say, hey, tell me about yourself. But Flash was a Viper seed dude, weapons school instructor, taught at weapons school. Now he flies F-35, so there's someone who's qualified, I think, to speak on it. I want to jump to Bender real quick, and then we can just go from here. But the next question, it again ties to seed. People want to know, is there culture differences between different seed units, and specifically like Misao and Spain? Do those differ from Shaw? Does the loss of an EWO in the CJ have in-depth training provided for the Viper? Wild weasel units and the RF spectrum and EW. So I think they're like going from an F-4 to a Viper single seat. Was there any degradation? You came from Misawa, you went to Shaw Bender. Was there any differences between the two? And Vader saying Misawa to McIntyre doing seat. Did you see any differences?
I think as like the baseline culture of weasel squadrons, I think is pretty similar. I don't know. You guys could probably chip in. But no, there. I think the attitude and the, like Pat or Flash was saying, with the you earn the weasel patch. So there's a lot of a lot of culture that's taught to you, I guess, as a young Weasel wingman. And so that kind of continued between the Panthers and Misawa and also the Gamblers when I went to Shaw. But the mission sets are a little different. So Misawa was a PACAF seed squadron. So we trained a lot for a Korea scenario or potential China scenario. We did overwater type training for Chinese destroyers, stuff like that. At Shaw, we focused more, I guess, a wider band. So we did a lot of Iran type stuff. So I guess the threat scenarios are a little bit different. The training's a little bit different, but the underlying culture is pretty similar. I will say that there are a lot of traditions that PACAF had that were a lot of fun. And when I came to the Gamblers, I expected them to be there and they were not. And that got me into some trouble a couple of times, like on day two. So there's a lot of fun things. Every squadron has, you know, their own little personality.
You shouldn't have left that sandwich sitting out there. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Protect your freaking sandwich.
That's self-critiquing. Yeah. I think for anybody who hasn't been a part of it, sandwich brunch is a wonderful pastime and you should bring it into any business that you work in. I got the opportunity, you know, obviously out of Misawa, which if anybody who's only listening, Bender and I have our 13th Fighter Squadron Weasel and shirts on, and which funny story about that. I went to McIntyre. Yeah, the biggest difference I found in McIntyre was because I was in the guard, your wingman wouldn't listen to you because turns out they're like a 4,000-hour lieutenant colonel. So my first sortie is number 3. In a seed fight in Bulldog airspace. And I just see my number 4 like peel off back into the target area as we're leaving. So I'm like, holy cow. So I'm like, Max AB, turn around the corner. And then he's now turning back towards me. And he's like, hey, 3, turn around. We're good. And I was like, okay. He just like kind of hubcaps himself on purpose just because he's like, oh, I'm going to go slay by myself. And I was like, all right. So yeah, it's each squadron has their own thing, but I think it's good because I think the biggest difference isn't between seed squadrons. It's probably like block 40 and block 50 squadrons around the world. Then I think one thing that kind of talking back to what Flash and Bender were talking about for the 35 is the 35 is riddled with a ton of seed experience. I mean, they have guys like Flash and Baller and Nike and Bender and Mega. And these guys are a ton of super smart seed guys who are now experienced F-35 guys and patches and Black Border patches, which a Black Border patch like Flash is a weapon school instructor. So the instructor who teaches the guys to become weapons officers. So there's a ton of F-16 seed experience that is, I assume, and Flash, correct me if I'm wrong, has shaped and is continuing to shape the way the F-35 does seed.
I don't know why Flash didn't mention that in the opening. We gave him the ability to mention that Black Border patch.
This is true. But it's like Vader saying and Bender saying, I echo all of that. I can also tell you, since Vader brought it up is, when a Block 40 squadron tries to become a Block 50 squadron, Vader might've been in a couple roll calls with me when that was occurring. That was an interesting cultural development, out there at Osan, for trying to be a Weasel squadron without kind of, earning your stripes, as some would say. But the culture stuff is, you guys were spot on. Everyone's kind of echoing the same or following the same traditions and same paths other than sandwich punch, which should absolutely be part of every business. But everything was pretty similar. It was just kind of regional. It's like Misawa is focused on that region. Spang obviously focused on the right region, and Shaw was just like, we're going to backfill everybody. And so it was a little bit of that and what are you focused on, but all the cultural stuff was the same, which was really cool because you could go anywhere and like play Weasel games and do all these different stuff and talk the same language. It was super cool.
Boom. So like Bender, you really wanted us to like take some time and talk to Flash for it. I feel like we're rolling here. I got two more questions if you guys will entertain it. One, I think, is a softball, so it's fair game, but it's straight up air-to-air fight between a current Viper and F-35, both with AIM-9Xs, with Hemics or some kind of helmet, guns. Let's see, guns. The pilot's roughly equal skill set. is the fight a foregone conclusion? So who, Bender or Flash? I mean,
Bender, you got it.
Well, so I said in my net, so do I have AMRAMs also? Is that part of the assumption?
No, so you can't use any like the special stealth stuff that Bad Enemy brings to fight, like kill him 100 miles away. So you merge. What's going to happen? I know what's going to happen, but for the listeners.
Well, if I do it right. Okay, so a visual merge, we'll say that. So within 5 miles, that's where the fight starts. I'm taking a Viper, probably. Definitely. The only part of that fight where the Viper is kind of like maybe not ideal is a low speed, high AOA type situation. We're trying to get the nose around. F-35 is really fun to fly in that regime specifically because you can go to 50 AOA and like rip the nose. You can pedal turn. If you are watching the video, you can see Flash moving his hands. So there's cool stuff you can do close aboard at kind of slower airspeeds in the F-35. But it's not a, like prior to getting to that point, the F-16 is going to win that fight.
All right. Last question. I think this tees up for the rest of the episode of just wherever we want to go. But general discussion. Fighter force structure, which there's a few things we can talk about the fighter force structure. I know there's opinions in the room here. The next big war, maybe Taiwan, 30,000 foot view. Let's talk jammers, weasels, air superiority, BVR, visual engagements, CSAR. What's the next fight? What does that look like? Near peer adversaries, so on and so forth. You guys are much smarter than me. So go. High level.
Very high 70, level. I don't know.
70,000 foot view.
Weird. That's where the classified stuff starts. I'm kidding. First off, the smarter may or may not be true, but I have a little bit of a different view. Like I've gotten the opportunities to kind of brief some of these plans and be a part of some of these mission plans and O plans, if you will, operational plans. I'm always skeptical of planning for something that I know would be geopolitically catastrophic for the world. And so when I like, what does the next fight look like? I think it is going to be as limited as humanly possible to have a tomorrow. Is probably what it's going to look like, more than likely. But if we go with what a lot of people think and what you have to plan for of all out, like full scale conflict and war, it is going to be human loss of life of which we have never experienced ever. And it's just going to, and it's going to be terrible. And the thing about it is just like, when you look at, painting a nice rosy picture for you guys.
This is fun. All right. It was a great night, guys. We'll see you later. Yeah.
but I'm smiling about it, but it's just like, that's my thing. It's just like, nobody wants that. Like nobody does. That's not good for anybody. But so it's like a little bit of the, as far as like how this whole thing is going to work, I do think that in the event that you could do it to be as limited as possible to make it have a tomorrow, non-lethal fires are going to be a huge thing. So we're talking jamming and things done not in the air domain and things like on the ground that don't have any human interaction or human touch associated with it. I think it's going to be a different kind of warfare than we've ever seen, which can have the same type of effects on a country because it's so interconnected these days. But as far as like the air war, it's going to look like a lot of other air wars because everything is to the point where if everything is low observable, then no one sees anybody and everyone then becomes visual. And then you're back in World War II with 80 airplanes all in the piece of sky that are doing stuff. And it might actually look a lot more like 1945 or than it did like 1991 and 1998, 99. So like, that's the kind of stuff that I think it's going to look like, personally, but in all reality, I think the next fight, is going to look very different based on the geopolitical connectivity between all threat countries involved, if you will. That's my take on it.
It's pretty smart.
Yeah, I defer to Flash.
Yeah, that was way more intelligent of an answer than I was going to give.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, well, super depressing, but yeah.
Guess what? We're going to shoot stuff too. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Stuff's going to blow up. Yeah. All right. Yeah. We're back. Back at it.
So
yeah, no, that's all I had. So there.
Yeah, well, I have one thing. So a question for Flash that I'll just real time throw this out there. So A-10s to the F-16, quickly to weapons school, to then leave weapons school and then go back and say, hey, I'm going to become an F-35, not just pilot, but weapons school instructor, unless I'm misunderstanding your timeline. But you were pretty quickly directly to the 6th at Nellis. I mean, how was it? I just assume you're a glutton for punishment. Like, how was that transition and flow?
Yeah. If you've ever, how you interact with your significant other and spouse when you're in an upgrade, just go through a 8-year upgrade. And then that will be about how life goes. As far as the stuff that the A-10 to F-16 was not a choice. That was me being pulled in the commander's office when I was a lieutenant with another lieutenant, being told that there are no A-10 assignments anymore, ever. Would you like to go fly something else? And we're going to paper call you to 4 ships so you can go fly for IFF. I was like, that was what was presented initially. And I was told verbally I was going to Laughlin to teach UPT and hopefully teach IFF, which would have been fine. But then a couple weeks later, a Viper TX happened and that whole thing. I always wanted to go to weapons school. That was the thing. So I played the timeline in Osan to stay there for 3 years with that in mind, to go there right from Osan, because it just was going to time out. And if at a later time we can talk about timelines to weapons school, no one actually cares. But then did that stuff. And then, yeah, the other one. Was I didn't want out of the Viper community. I just wanted out of a certain location. And so I volunteered. I was like, hey, me and my family got to get out of here. I was like, I volunteered to go back to, I knew I was going back to Nellis. I was always going back to Nellis no matter what after Shaw. And so they were just like, well, we can get you out of here now, but we can't get you into the Viper. Would you accept doing a TX into the F-35 and then just going right to Nellis and being an instructor in the 6th. I was like, well, that sounds awesome. I was like, I would love to do that. What you don't realize when you're making that decision in the room is that you're going to go through weapons school again. Kinda. It's a gentlemanly version, and like you're sitting around and all this stuff. And then I was just a bad instructor for the first about, I would say 9 months to a year I was there. Still just learning how to do things. I knew how to do the seed stuff so I could conceptually talk with guys, and around a whiteboard and around a map and an IADS diagram and a mission planning table, I was serviceable. But like flying the airplane, not so much. But as far as like the glutton for punishment, yeah. I don't like standing still. This kind of gets out in front of me to the point where I don't even really know what I'm talking about most times. And I like that as well as like far as the transitions that I've had. So it's been mentally stimulating the entire time, which is what I enjoy. But as far as like the work involved, yeah, that really sucked actually.
your whole active duty time was just an upgrade.
That's facts. With a deployment, and then the last year or so, I was in Nellis. And now I'm not an upgrade anymore, which is great.
Yeah, it's like what the rest of the world experiences, you know? Like, oh, this is actually kind of nice. That's a good question. No, Vader, he just quit. So,
oh man, we got to get Vader back. Yeah, we have
his deep radio voice. That's what we need.
Yeah, very soothing. The first podcast, this is an aside until he comes back. The first podcast demo he did, he's like, hey, check this out. Like, let me know what it sounds like. And it was like elevator, like porno music. It was like super like low, husky voice. Like, I hope you guys are enjoying this show. Like, you can't talk like that. Don't talk like that. Yeah. It was pretty funny.
He says it's like a, such a soothing voice, you know, like it's the deep night, our late night DJ voice.
Yeah.
Vader. That's probably how he got his call sign. We'll just make that up until he gets back. You were probably his naming.
But... I was. Yeah. We got named on the same night. Yeah.
So oh, yeah, I guess that would make sense.
Yeah. I think he got to the squadron like 3 weeks before me. So he was named first. I was named second. And then in the Panthers, the youngest guy to get named gets the name embroidered on this super ratty old like shirt that they have had for who knows how long. So probably from the, I don't know, how old was that shirt at Misawa, Vader, the yellow?
Probably from the no idea.
70, I don't know. It was old. Yeah. But it's cool because it has like all these embroidered call signs from, you know, decades of fighter pilots getting named. So it was pretty cool. It was a cool naming night.
That's legit.
Yeah, the I had connectivity issues. Bender, did you talk about how our Wild Weasel shirts got mixed up?
No, I did not.
Yeah, hey, Bender, you want to show your left shoulder on your Weasel and shirt?
Mine's pretty.
Yeah, so pretty chill. For I can't see that, but for all the audio only people, I believe if memory serves, Bender, you just have a harm sitting there, correct?
Yeah, it's just a harm. Yep.
Yeah, so I've got, as you can see on mine, it's a harm with a lady on there, happens to be blonde. So my wife is a brunette, his wife, Bender's, is a blonde. And so we both go in there in rapid succession and order our shirts. And they mix us up, so they get our names and on the wrong shirt because they're identical shirts. So I have a blonde girl on my shirt, and then Bender, like a day later, is like, hey, skip the girl. I just want the harm. So then our shirts come back and I have a blonde and my wife's like, what's the deal? You just got a blonde girl on yours? I was like, no, see what had happened was, and so that took some explaining. So thank you, Bender.
Yeah. Always causing problems. Yep. That's pretty funny. Now that we did make fun of your voice, Vader, or your radio voice, but it's
getting yes. good. Oh,
that's why I literally don't know what it is. About, it's not, it's not a conscious decision.
It's very soothing. And I think this counts. We can leave that part in the podcast because we talked about you behind your back while you were gone. So yeah, now we're being forthright with you. We don't have to edit that
absolutely.
Part.
Absolutely. That's Bender made up your name. People who are audio only are in fact missing out on the glorious stash that you have.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate that. It's most days when I go through the base, they're like, holy cow, because it's it may be out of regulations, but I don't even know what the regulations are. So yeah.
Does the guard have regulations?
I'm not sure. I just don't read the regulations. You don't want to know. You know, it works out pretty well for me. So the one thing
you went guard to guard. No, so I was thinking you went guard unit to guard unit, but you actually didn't. You did have a Holloman stop. I digress. Go. Your point's probably much more entertaining than mine.
Oh yeah. Well, so we've talked previously on one of the bro chats, I believe, was the time at Nellis when we were all flying F-16s back in the day, and Flash was in the other formation, and I told the whole story how my wingman lost all of his navigation, lost everything, and I rejoin on him, and we're co-altitude with another formation of F-16s, and Flash was number one for that formation. So I've kind of shared Flash for your essay. I've shared the harrowing story of that, but go ahead and if you want to go ahead and kind of provide your perspective, and then more specifically kind of that debrief, because I thought the debrief was it started out being a complete foul until you and Link kind of stepped in.
Yeah, I got a text message from some guys that says, hey man, you got name dropped in a podcast. And I was like, oh, I was like, I'd listened to Rain's podcast a couple times. And I was like, oh, I'll listen to this one. He's like, see what, but yes, that is the single most ridiculous flying story I have ever heard. And I just so happened to have also been a part of it. But like you nailed the whole story. We're pushing in Vol Charlie. And all of a sudden I just see two airplanes that are going the wrong way. It's like just one way street coming this way. And I was like, oh no. And me and my wingman, I'm like, I don't know what's happening, whatever. But I see one guy on the link and then just a radar track next to you, which was Kanga. And I'm like, bottom of the block now. And just like, we were about to push and I just like went like 90 and I just like look up and I see two silhouettes, because we're in the weather. I see two silhouettes of two F-16s go over the top of me. It turns out it was an 800-foot pass because we were at the bottom of the block and you were at the top of a 1,000-foot block and y'all went home. Then we pushed. And we fought, and I think we died and lost in wholesale, probably because I planned it. And it was like, but the but then Link met me at the door when I had my flight gear still on, and Link met me at the door of the red flag building. Like, I was like, "What's up, dude?" And he's like, "So did you ever get the knock it off passed?" And I was like, "Yeah, at the end of the fight. Yeah, I got it." And he was like, "No, the first one." I was like, there was two. I was like, oh, there were two. And usually there's one. And but yeah, there were two on this day. Yeah. And then like we started asking questions like in tape review. And then we went to MiG-1 and we went to the mission commander and we then went to the red flag commander who tossed out the poker chips like an idiot. Sorry if he's listening, I don't care.
It's like, facts.
But it was like, but we were just like, hey, so what are we gonna do about this? And it was like, well, we'll save it to the end. And Link was just like, we're not gonna save it till the end. But then we got trumped because it was rather an important red flag, if you remember that one, what they were trying to accomplish. And yeah, it was to the point where they were like, they cleared red off, and Link, me and him had talked about what we were gonna do. Like, we're just like, hey, we're just going to let this one ride and like see if people do the right thing and not just like jump in at the start, because no one likes that guy. Lost Vader, but it's all good. Yeah. He was there. He was here.
Yeah. he was here.
But like we said, we were just like, hey, no one likes that guy that just jumps in at the start and just like takes it. It's like, let the people who are supposed to take accountability for this take accountability. They didn't. And so when they cleared red off, Link just stood up and just goes, sit down. And he's like, no one is leaving this room until we find out who said knock it off and who said negative. And we're like, well, we know who said knock it off. It's that guy. It's Kanga right there in the back. I was like, so we got one. Let's find out number two. And we had the 06 stand up and tell us to talk to him afterwards and we would discuss it, but it was never discussed in the entire room. And it was
ever
the biggest ever. And it was like the biggest foul of all time. And it was never discussed. And the only time it was discussed was the poker chip that Vader talked about last week about don't let your wingman's knock it off get messed up. And it was to the point, and that was to the point where Tito in the red flag window, instead of taking a left up the Sally, took a right to Columbia. And it was awesome. And I was like, everyone knew it because we also had to talk some lieutenants out of doing some stuff that night. And but it was a wild time. It was a wild time to be alive, man. But it was an interesting thing, to the point where we were begging people and to take accountability in a fighter pilot debrief, and it just didn't happen. And so then 2 days later we got pulled off the flying schedule, and they ended up doing an investigation.
Really?
So the vice commander of Red Flag pulled me and Link into a room, and we talked about it. And I guess they ended up doing some stuff to the person who said negative, which, I mean, I don't care about. I don't want people to be punished. I just want people to say that this was messed up. But there was an investigation that happened after. But overall, like, Vader, you told the story perfect. Link meet me at the door was hilarious. Them doing the poker chip was hilarious. Telling Red to sit down, we're not leaving the room until we go over this, was hilarious. Now that we didn't run into you.
That was my favorite part. Right. Sit down, we're not done.
Yeah, my favorite part too was not hitting another F-16.
Yeah, that's true. That was my favorite part. Second favorite was,
But anyways.
That was the red flag commander that said, like, basically skip it, talk to us afterwards, right?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yes.
That was totally, and so for those listening, it's important to know is like there's a permanent party, someone, you know, a team that runs Red Flag as all these units come into to Vegas and they do this. But usually there is a host wing. So one of these units that are participating sends like an O6, whether it be a group commander, vice wing commander, or the wing commander that is also there. I'm sure like there's usually two O6s, a morning guy or a day guy and a night guy. I'm surprised like they didn't chime in. I felt like whenever we were the host wing, had that been like ROG or whatever here and that, like would have jumped into that fight. So I'm kind of surprised that didn't happen. It's amazing if no one died.
If I remember correctly, I think that one got repurposed for things that were happening in the spring of 18. Which is why it was a little bit weird. The Warfare Center commander, the 2-star, was like the guy who was like supposedly running the whole Red Flag. So there was no lead wing for that one. But the 2-star just wasn't in the room. So like the Red Flag commander was like the guy for all the Vols who reported back to the 2-star. And it was just it was just an interesting time. And then like just a super random training thing occurs to where we need to talk about this. And like, we're too worried about prepping for combat to talk about training.
Dude. Ah, man, it's so like, good you were in that foreship leading it. Like, had it been me with my radar mech, like
we would have been pretty hosed in combat if we'd been down 4 Vipers who hit each other as well.
No joke. Man, it is crazy when Vader told that story, man. Again, it's good that you were leading it. It had it been me, I'd have run a bunch of jets into one another, you know, just fat, dumb, and happy. So good for you.
I was just scared. I was just like, they're coming right for us. And I didn't know what was going on.
This makes sense. This is crazy right now. Dude.
Yeah, there was literally supposed to be nobody pointing east at that time. Yeah. Like nobody pointing east for like a 5-minute gap window was the game plan. And it was like, I see 2 people pointing east. I'm like, that's not good.
Yeah, the game plan's falling apart here. Something's not going right. Man, spicy. That's much more interesting than anything I got. What do you guys think about this whole KC-46? I know we talked about it a few times, but you see the latest that it's not going to be able to refuel the A-10, which I think it's a sly way of getting rid of the A-10, in my opinion, like pro move Air Force. Sorry, you're out.
It just boggles my mind that it's just like, hey, this is a problem and we're going to give you more money to fix it. And I understand that they're footing the bill for a few billion of like the cost. I get that, but that's just my brother was the OSS commander at McConnell when they were betting down the KC-46. And he was just like, dude, my views are not the views of the United States Air Force. Like it was just a disaster. That whole program is an absolute disaster.
Right. Well, none of this represents the views of the Air Force, nor the DOD, as I should mention. It's also on my website. But, dude, it's mind-boggling. A 767 has been around forever. It's been a commercial tanker. And while there are some slight differences, someone's going to chime in. There's a lot of differences. Like, this is off-the-shelf technology. And here we are 20-plus years later, and this sucker is, like, barely giving gas. Yeah, shenanigans. And the A-10, it's out. Sorry. It's again pro move to get rid of the A-10.
It's out.
Oh well.
Yeah, brooms in front of your face. It's completely unknowable how to fix it.
Yeah, it's
impossible.
How does it work that they can just not build the product to spec and then buy their own design and then they're like, yeah, it's going to cost you more money to get the product that you've already paid for? I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's brilliant because I would think, I haven't seen the contract, right? But it would be like, must be able to refuel F-16, A-10, F-15. Like, you would think that would be kind of it. And then also, if you were designing it too, like, hey, oh, by the way, do you guys want to refuel the A-10? You didn't put that in the contract, you know, like, but I feel like that's in there. I don't know.
I enjoyed the for those that the article that you sent out that you to read, which was awesome. I really enjoyed the PA representative that said it's the A10's fault that it can't generate enough thrust to overcome the stiff boom problem. I was like, come on.
Come on now. Okay.
I was like, come on now. I was like, you're sitting here talking about, you're being asked why the KC-46, we're spending more money to fix the problems that were supposed to be fixed about 10 years ago. And then you're just like,
yeah.
I had a feeling that it was like in their notebook, they like flip, they just like have slides of what to do when they have to go back to their circle. And it's just like, I think one of those slides is blame it on the hog. And like, it's like, we don't have enough money. It's because of the
A-10.
It's just like, yeah, KC-46 can't refuel A-10s. It's because the A-10 can't fly fast enough. And you're like, but I think that's what she was kind of going for was her meme pages.
Yeah. Speaking of memes, good memes.
I'm surprised they got the airplane right. I would assume it'd be like, oh, the frog foot can't make it happen, you know, something random. But
it, you know, I share that stuff like any time. I mean, not every time, but like there's so egregious blunders by public affairs. And if I guess people who listen haven't seen it, like just go follow the Air Force. The latest thing I shared was recruiting was sharing a picture about the Raptor and it's an F-35 in the turn. You're just like, there's only like five fighters you got to be able to identify. And like, it's super easy. I will say the Russians have done a phenomenal job on their PSYOPs campaign with just pumping Google ads. For any time you search for Viper or F-15, it pulls up a flanker. Because I think that's what our public affairs, they do. Like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to Google it. And then, boom, a flanker pulls up, and the Russians have labeled it an F-15. And so they share it without asking anyone, every time.
Which is why we have retention problems for fighter pilots. That's it. They're winning.
Flash, you wrote an article about that whole... I'd say it alludes to some of the retention type related issues. That'd be a good thing to talk about. The War on the Rocks article you wrote. Again, you're very smart.
That was very wise. That was a beautiful segue, yeah. Bender.
Tee it up.
I did, man. I didn't start writing that stuff. And I don't know who's read it. I think like all 20 people who have read it. I didn't start writing it with the intent. Like writing stuff down with the intent to like get published.
That was actually
a bar conversation. It was like, hey, if you're writing this stuff down, like I think it'd be cool to send that to somebody and maybe have that discussion. The reason I was looking at it was I didn't really know how to process. Cause again, like we're going through our decision on whether to stay in the active duty Air Force or get out, or like what we wanted to do right around that decision-making time, go to school, take an assignment, like what do we want to do? And there's all these different considerations. And then it was also like COVID times, which was, which made things easier, of course. But what I noticed was, all the dudes in the sixth, like, and all the dudes that I talked to, like over in the Viper wick and the Hog wick and like all the other guys that I talked to were literally asking the same questions of themselves. And I was like, okay, why is it that I like to be a data oriented person, because if I don't, then I'm just going to like go off on random tangents. But like why is it that literally everyone is it's decision-making time, but why is this decision-making time for the Air Force? And then why is everyone having the same exact considerations and no one else is really talking about it, where it's like, oh, well, we'll just take away additional duties. That'll fix it. And it's like, or we'll up the labor contract. That's not a bonus. Like $5,000. We'll up that and that'll take care of it. And you're just like, no, actually the number is going this way instead of that way. And so I started kind of like doing some research that, not Air Force related research, and noticed that you could look at trends in demographic data for society that you could just stack on top of an Air Force career. And now you would sit there and just be like, oh, that's why. And so that was kind of the impetus of the article. And I haven't gotten off my kind of lazy butt to write part two. I have a draft because there's a part in the article that says like more to come on the solutions to this problem. I was like, I've just been a problem guy, no solutions for the last like 10 months. There's been some stuff.
I'm a problems guy.
Nothing happened right around that time of anything getting when that article is being published in my life. But the thing about it is it's like, I just wanted people to kind of look at it and say, okay, in 2022, the 1970s model of personnel management does not work not because of Air Force related variables, because of societal and social and demographic variables. It's like the rise in the increase in age at which a male has their first kid. It's like people are having kids later in life, which means that when you're in that time from 10 years after pilot training graduation, which is generally 11 and a half to 12 years of your Air Force career, to 24 years, which is when you can generally retire as an 06 and get all the money that you earned 3 years time in service, that 12 to 24 years, you're going to move a minimum of 5 to 7 times based on going to school, whatever career jobs that they're moving. Like, that's just the way it is. And so if at that 12-year point, your kid is 4 now instead of like 10, like in the 70s, those kids were out of the house at that 20 to 24-year point. Those kids are now entering high school at the 20 to 24-year point. And so you're making these decisions based on your family, and you're just being like, okay, do I want to send my kid to 3 high schools? Like my dad did. Like my brother went to 3 high schools. My dad made the decision to retire, so I didn't have to do it. But he was a product of 1977 Air Force Academy graduate and like all this different stuff. And so I looked at his career and life, and I looked at my career and life, realized they were fundamentally different. Stack that with like some Stanford and Pew researches and things like that, and was just like, this is kind of dumb. And yeah. I think it's like right in our face of why this occurs. And so basically dudes are just like, hey man, I'm just not going to send my kid to 5 to 7 schools in like during puberty.
Yeah.
And it's like that's really what it is. And you look at it and you just say, okay, well, these guys aren't committed to the cause of staying in for 24 years. And that's also wrong. Cause every single one of them will sit there and it's like, no, I still want to fly fighters. I just want to do it in Salt Lake, Utah for the rest of my life. And, send my kid to the same school. So that was the impetus of the article, was kind of like get my thoughts and like the thoughts of everybody else that was talking to me, get it down on a paper, figure out like where it was coming from. And then all this data just started coming in, and then guys were in the bar have been like, well, this is why I did it. And have you seen this? Like these curves and things of that nature. And then sitting with my commander being like, well, here's your linear career that you're going to go execute. And I just go, well, that is when my kid is going to enter middle school. And that's when they're going to try out for travel baseball. And that's when they're going to try out for this team. And when they want to do any of this stuff. And I was just like, nah, that's not for the McVay family. And that's the point of the article, is just try to get that on the same assumptions and be like, hey man, it's not anything the Air Force is doing. You cannot control what society is doing, and stop trying. Just understand what's going on. So long answer. I apologize, but that's really the whole article. But it was cool to get it published. It was very therapeutic for me at the time to determine that I wasn't batshit crazy. and it's like, why would I not want to stay in the active duty Air Force and like go do cool things? And it's like, oh, because I can go to the reserves and do cool things.
Yeah, it's a great article. And that's, I mean, for me, that was the calculus was there. It's like, I know it's going to be school, staff, be a DO, be a commander, back to school, staff. And you're like, all right, it's going to be 5 schools in the next like 8 years, 9 years for, you know, my kiddo. Like, that's, to me, that's just not fair. Like, flying fighters is awesome. The Air Force is imperfect. I think we all might agree on that. And there's a few frustrations. But at the end of the day, like, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being around the people. I enjoyed the mission. I mean, flying fast jets and like solving complex problems is fun. And all the BS that we usually bitch and moan about, is outweighed by that. But the fact that at the end of the day, you're like, it's not about money. At least for me, it wasn't about money. I thought it was paid well. It's just like, I have no control over my life, but it's, and I know I'm going to be moving around, but the bad deal is I'm jerking around my family too, who now is, they're victims in this, and it could work out really good. Or if you get on the bad deal train, like, good luck. It sucks for you and your entire family, but digress.
And just like what you're kind of saying is just like, it is very fun to have BGCs about the Air Force and like,
yeah,
talk about all, like, I mean, yeah, we can sit around and talk about the great things. I love the Air Force. The Air Force, I talk about it all the time. The Air Force has been very good to the McVay family. Like my dad has a saying, he goes, the next tuition check I write will be the first tuition check I ever write. And he's just like, so it's been very good to the McVay family. And I really enjoy being in the Air Force. In fact, I enjoy it too much. Just ask my wife. And it's just like I like to work for this organization. And I wanted to keep doing it. It was just one of those things where it's like, I had to find my way that still met my like personal values and priorities to still be able to do the things that I want to. And I was going to go to Hill Air Force Base anyways, whether it was active duty or in the reserves, as long as the snakes hired me, of course, which they did. And I was very lucky and blessed to have that happen. I was like, but it was just one of those things where, I love this job. I love what we do. Nobody actually hates the Air Force in all reality. Nobody hates it. But yeah, so it's just, you just got to find a way. And that's just what's happening now. And you just see it. Like, we're talking 20% retention rates of the active duty. And there's like, the data is right there. You got to figure out what the purpose, what the reason behind that data is. And I just have not quite put my finger on it that we can't see data, work with data, change policy. I haven't quite seen that, why we can't do that on a rapid pace yet. But
yeah,
I'm willing to help. And if writing articles is the way that I can do it, then that's what I'll do.
What are you guys seeing now? I mean, this is like it's the horse that just keeps getting beat here. It's like the same thing. And this has been echoed from what was like 2015, 2016, like when they started doing the fighter pilot crisis task force, going around to the bases, talking to guys. This is the same information. This is the same data, more or less, has been being presented, but nothing seems like it's changing. Or are you guys seeing any kind of changes?
The only thing I'll say, and that you guys have heard me talk a little bit, I kind of want to hear what Bender has to say about the subject, but at some point a crisis starts becoming the norm. And so generally, if there's a crisis, like a natural disaster, we throw a massive amount of resources and manpower at the problem to fix it as fast as humanly possible. And so when you have a crisis that lasts literally before my Air Force career started and is currently ongoing, it's not a crisis anymore. It's just the norm. And you have chosen not to fix it. And so that's my take on it. It's like, you still have, I think they actually did change the name. It's not the Aircrew Crisis Task Force anymore.
Right.
I don't even know if it was ever the Aircrew Crisis Task Force, but numerous articles called it a crisis, but they called it a crisis for literally 13 years. And it's like, yeah, it's not a crisis anymore, dude. It's just a problem you've elected not to fix.
Bender, what do you say?
No, I totally agree with that. And that's one of my, I'll try not to get too salty, but one of my beefs with the organization.
Salt's always
welcome. The willingness.
Salty's welcome.
It is. And I always say I'm not going to get salty. Then here we go. But it just feels a lot like there's not really accountability. Like, we don't really care. We say, like, we can't lose these fighter pilots. Like, we spend all these millions of dollars on their training. We need all the experience that they have. But they don't, no one really cares, because they don't need to care right now. Like, there's no fight that's happening where we're required at this moment in time. But they all do recognize that, like, losing all of this experience, it costs us a great deal as far as mission capabilities go. We're not paying that bill yet. So they're just like passing the bill off. They'll pass the bill off for who knows how long, probably forever, honestly. So I think, like, just like Flash is saying, it's been a crisis for 13 years because the bills never really come due yet, but it'll come due at some point, or it could. And then, you know, bad things happen, and that's, we face the reality of it. So who knows? I don't know. There's a lot of, I mean, there's just so much in the Air Force. I'm like Flash. I love looking back and like seeing all the cool things I've done. My family has loved it. We've been awesome places. So, and then that's why we're having this podcast. That's why Flash does a lot of the extracurricular stuff that he does, like writes articles or mentors new pilots, is because we all care deeply about the institution, and we care deeply about being like the best fighter pilots that there is on this planet and that there will ever be on this planet. So, you know, we're not ready to give up the real fight, but we are ready to give up all the crap that just kind of comes with it, that isn't really that important, but that costs us so much in time and resources and family, capital, all that stuff. So we could talk about this forever.
Oh yeah. And like that, you see it, that like the last, it's not the last one because it talks about me drinking in the bar after I go fly, but like in the, there's the art in the article, I said, what if I told you, and I have, I like to do this sometimes where it's just like, maybe I like to try to convince people and sell people on something that even I don't believe. It's a nice little brain exercise to try sometimes, but like, I have been able to argue that the fighter pilot shortage is not real, and it's a fugazi, and it's just like, but it is real, by the way. It's like, we can't fill staff in, UPT positions. Like that's a fact. It's just like, now whether those should be fighter pilot 11F, positions, UPT should, staff maybe not. But the real answer is, because we haven't gotten smart with our policies and efficiencies with the technology advances that we have, is now you're not utilizing the people that you do have, like reservists. It takes an act of Congress to become a commander, and it takes like to transition statuses and things like that. You just don't get paid for a month, and all these different things of like virtual staff has been proven that it's a beautiful thing. And you got a ton of people that would sit on ACC staff from Nellis Air Force Base. And all these different things that we've done on trial, like pilot program stuff. But we haven't implemented as norm, that just needs to happen. But anyways, just like Vendor said, you could go all day, on stuff like this, and there will be a time for, there absolutely are solutions to it. And we want to be a part of them. It's just, if you're willing to listen and take solutions, from a major who elected majors who elected to go do something else, which also seems to be a small problem, with people these days.
You wonder, I wonder, you know, it's a cultural shift, right? And this doesn't happen overnight, but you know, we've name dropped Maestro on the podcast. I think we had, you know, a lot of really good things to say about Maestro, and I saw, you know, what he did. We went to the flying hour program. One of the first things, I had him in the back seat doing the demo and talked to him specifically about that, because just saw what it was as a grind at Shaw, where no one else before would say, hey, no, we can't do this. This is literally breaking our jets. It's breaking our pilots. It's breaking our maintainers. This does not make sense, just to fly. And you're yeah, that's a whole nother story in itself. But I hope that enough guys trickle up. The piece you kind of brought was interesting, like for a reservist to be a commander. I'm curious, like in my year group, 07 year group, I think there were like 16-ish Viper drivers, most of which were FAPES. There's like two or three guys like straight out of pilot training. And I want to say there's like two guys still in active duty from my year group. And I don't know what that pool should have been, but it probably should have been 60, 70, 80 guys in order to fill enough billets later on down the road as commanders, group commanders, et cetera. Like, you got to plan for the whole thing. And so that bill has not come due yet, or it's coming due right now. So I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah. And the funny thing is like you, and this is, by the way, as it currently stands, just like we talked about, if you stay in, just like we're kind of talking about it, like I have a massively high threshold for leadership. And if you're put in a position of leadership, then you need to be one. And it's just like, so if you stay in, that's kind of what you're getting. It's like, you just,
yeah,
like, even if you didn't want that position, like, it's just like, hey man, we need you. And it's just like, and we're going to put people in positions. It's like putting in the fifth string quarterback, like at the, like in an NFL game. And it's like, okay, this is going to go as well as we thought. And it's just like, and it's no fault on those guys. Like, it's no fault right. on those guys. Like, it's not their fault. And things of that nature. But it's like, but in the snakes, like, I am middle of the road. Like, you got 10 guys to my left and right that were all told they were going to be commanders if they stayed in the active duty. And it's just like, so you're just like, okay, what did they do instead if it wasn't you? And you just ask right. that question, you just go, okay, then that's what we kind of have. And whether everyone was going to be a fighter squadron commander or an OSS commander or go back and be a UPT squadron commander, like, you need those guys in the active duty. And we just got to find ways to either keep them in the active duty, because I'm a huge fan of keeping people in the active duty, or if they elect to go to the reserves, let them go do things that would benefit the active duty without getting some of this like random red tape bureaucracy in the way. Just pick the best human for the job, just like you do in the real world.
Strange concept there.
Strange. It's weird. I don't think anyone's ever done it.
It's impossible to do. So I don't know what you're talking.
Unproven.
Unproven.
Yeah.
Unproven. Except I think when I worked at Ace Hardware when I was 16, like, they picked the best cashier and made him the shift lead. And it wasn't me. But it's like, he was the shift lead. Now it's like, oh, Ace Hardware figured it out.
Strange. How can we not do that? Man, there's so much red tape. I think it goes back. We do, like, you want to make this better. I don't think any other organization where you're like, hey, I'm not really, I mean, me really, like, I'm on the outsider looking in, but you care about it, right? If I had to go do it again, I would go do it again. It afforded me a lot of opportunities, met a lot of great people, a lot of cool things, right? I would do it again. There are things that could do better and you want it to do better. And you're just like, ah, come on. Like, for me, again, jump back. It's like, if you did something hybrid, like, all right, hey, look, you guys don't mind South Carolina. You can stay there for 8 years. You might have to go deploy, do something, but your family can be put, stay put, have the same house, same schools, yada, yada, yada. Like, all right, that's like a decent COA. Like, that probably would have worked out, but that's impossible. Like, you can't do that. Like, that's, like, you must move. Like, we can't have you staying here.
It is difficult and no one's choosing Kunsan.
Yeah, strange.
It's like, no one's
strange.
I was like, you know what? You know where I want to put down roots? Gunsan. That's where I want it. Mm. That's what I want to do. But I don't know. It is. They are hard problems to address. And I know, like, we're talking about this stuff. It's like, oh man, we can't get this right. I also do just want to throw a quick plug in on the whole thing. I'm also the same guy that when somebody in the bar says that we're going to lose the next fight, I'm just like, I don't believe that. Actually, like, I still think it's like, yeah, there's a ton of things that I wish we had materially and leadership wise and policy wise and all this different stuff. And we could bitch about that till the sun comes up here in Utah tomorrow. I was like, but I don't subscribe to the fact that because of this, that we are just destined to lose in the event that somebody wants to pick a fight with the U.S. I think it's going to be difficult. And like I talked about it, it was just like, it might look weird and look pretty bad. I was like, but I'm still a kind of an optimist on how this would go because of the guys that elect to stay in. Like, I know that Bender and probably you, Rain, like, even today, if somebody was like, I bet you can figure out how to start a Viper. Like, if it was Viper only, it was like, if it was required, like Bender would show up to work at the snakes full time, which right. he is. But like, everyone would do it in the event that we would all do it. And just like Bender was talking about, I think the United States still does have the best fighter pilots in the world, and we can bitch about policies and stuff like that, but it's still a pretty good place to be and things of that nature. But 100%. It could devolve into not being the case in the event that we don't fix some of this stuff, like, in the next 2 to 3 years.
Interesting point. So my job now in the reserves, slightly different than what you guys are doing, but we did an exercise like 2 months ago, and they're walking through the timeline of like how things are going to get executed, yada, yada, yada. But one part is activating a bunch of people, who have retired, and pulling them out. And the timeline, this is like, you know, 0 to day 5, in which I chuckled, right? Because it takes me 5 days to even like log in and get orders. So I'm like, one, you're going to find these 1500 retirees that God knows where they are. You know, good luck trying to find them. But I do say, I was like, the piece of it is like, all right, I'm not going to be able to get orders. No one's going to be able to get orders. No one's going to get paid for weeks on end. And there's going to be all these frustrations we always complain about. But in the end, dudes will step up to get the job done because care about this country, care about the people that are beside you, and want to win. So like, you can't change that, which I don't think everyone in the world, now they get to travel around and see some interesting places. That is not a given. But to that point, like, it's, would be nice if we could just fix a few things, like
the easy ones. Emails. The easy ones. Like, there are some easy very ones. Easy fixes you could do, like that would do it. But
it turns out with all the different like business things I got going on, and such, like, I don't know, I have like 6 different email accounts on my phone, some of which require authentication applications, yada yada yada. But like, everyone else can figure this out, but God forbid if we try to figure this out in the DOD. But again, I digress. Got a little salt here and there.
Sipper token for my friend yesterday. Sipper token for my buddy yesterday was an adventure. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, how long did that take?
Well, I mean, I won't say what they ended up doing because I don't want anyone to get in trouble. But but
salt, like, problems.
It was just like, hey, to do this the right way, you were called out here to be on TDY to solve a problem for us. To do this the right way, the purpose of you coming out here will be moot. And he was like, all right, well, we can't do that, so let's figure out a different way. And they did, because that's how you would win, because that's why we're gonna win.
Yeah. Bender made the point as several episodes, I mean, I remember the first bro chat we did, but it was like, it gets done on the backs of dudes and dudettes in the squadron who want to win. Like, ultimately, you're not just gonna let it fail. That's not in the mentality. Which it shouldn't have to be that way every single time, it feels like.
Yeah, and I wonder if the gap, it feels just like the gap is getting bigger between the organizations in the Air Force that do, that they get it done, they make it happen, and then the rest that, I mean, you're just lugging, you know, there's 5% of the Air Force that is just carrying the rest, the 95% on their back, you know? It's getting heavier and heavier. It just seems like that, and maybe that's inaccurate, but like, just the IT, we talked about how long it takes to log in. But this morning, like, I tried to print something. I mapped 3 freaking printers, which mapping a printer on a Nipper computer is like getting a freaking computer programming degree at MIT, is what it feels like to me. I'm not like super smart. But, and it never worked. And none of them ever printed the freaking sheet of paper that I was trying to print, you know, like 2 hours later. So I've just wasted so much of my time just trying to print a sheet of paper. It's mind boggling that we can't figure that kind of stuff out. And that's just like, that's a pretty little part of it, you know. But if a comm squadron, and I don't, maybe there are comm squadrons out there that can rage and make it happen, but if a comm squadron could make it happen the way a mobility squadron makes it happen, or a tanker squadron makes it happen, like, we'd be so much more functional, higher functioning as an organization.
I think probably that too. If you guys remember, when I was casual at Moody, we had a comm dude in the squadron, and it was about 4 months into my casual, they pulled him to the group. And then about, you know, 6 months later, they pulled him to the wing. And that was the Air Force's transition period where, you know, you used to have admin in the squadron, someone who spoke finance, someone who did comm. So if you had an issue, they could come fix it, versus now you put in a ticket, they show up when you're flying, and they go back to their office and say, ticket closed. And you're like, nothing was fixed. And wait 3 more weeks.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Flash is still there. Vader, we didn't mention it. Like, Vader peeled out a long time ago. He just hubcapped and he was gone. But I think probably as we like wrap up, Flash, you're going to write another article? You said that's in the queue?
Yeah, I am going to because in the first one I said I was going to,
there you go.
But no, I am. This one's going to focus on solutions, hopefully, and a lot of them was the rough draft. I'm not very happy with the rough draft, which is why I haven't sent it in. But it kind of it starts. Let me paint a picture for you guys. But it starts where I was just like, so there I was in the bar, and we literally fixed all the problems in the Air Force, and we wrote none of them down. And it was just like, which has never been talked about in the history of any fighter pilot. But in all reality, I started writing them down. So they're not my solutions. They are a combination and a collection.
Now Flash froze.
I freeze. Am I back?
Oh, you're back now. I was like, man, this it's cliff. Yeah, look at it. It's slowly peeling out here, man. You're back.
We're back. But yeah, so it's a collection of solutions from a bunch of different people. Some are mine, most are not. But it's just like, it's like, hey guys, just like, man, what if we just did this? And it's like, yeah, that would probably work. And it was just like, write that down. And so I carried around like a little notebook and I was just like, hey, if a good idea, personnel policy, like personnel management policy, I got towards the end of my time in the six, I had a whole lot of time in my hands. So I was like kind of walking around, not doing a whole lot. So I just talked to people, which I'm sure didn't annoy anyone. But as far as how that was going was my family already lived in Utah. But what that afforded was the fact that when we were sitting there, I got pretty passionate about these personnel management policies. And if anybody was like bitching about any of it, it was like, I would stay in the Air Force if I could map a nipper printer. It's like, I will write that down. And it's just like, okay. So the second article, and I am going to write it, and this will probably give me a little bit of motivation. I really appreciate you guys bringing me on. This has been awesome. A little bit of motivation to do it. It's going to focus on solutions. And like I said, a lot of them are not mine, but it's just a collection of them on if this small thing that is within our power, every single solution that is in the rough draft of the article is something that can be affected at the MAJCOM level or below. It generally doesn't involve a whole lot of congressional, because like if you have to go to Congress to change it, then that kind of sucks.
Yep.
But you could do it within big Air Force, like HAF and AFRIC together, to kind of change that stuff. There would be some massaging of like the Title 10, Title 32, Title 50 type stuff. But it's within the realm of possibilities, and all of it is stuff that can be done, and that's what it's going to focus on. But yeah, it's I'd give it 3 months. I'll do it in 3 months.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, you said it. Now it's like etched in stone. So
yeah, now I got to do it. I'm going to write that down. I got let's call it February 1st. But
hack,
which is 1 year from the last one. So that'll be good.
Yeah, it's perfect. Well, dudes, what else? You got anything else before we wrap up here? Flash is awesome, man. Having you on here, this is good. You know, have a pro talking about some complex things.
Well, God, the whole thing is like, you guys are pros, man. I can't tell you how honored I was when Bender was just like was talking about it and was like, we'd love to have you on. And just like, I love this. I love the fact that you're doing this, Rain. You guys were super cool guys. I loved flying with at Shaw and being around and like that makeshift gambler building that we kind of lived in for a hot minute. So like seeing Rain like commanding the demo team and all that stuff and what went into that, and then flying with Bender is just a damn good instructor, and now getting to be out here and then being on the podcast with you guys and seeing Vader again, it's been cool. So just I appreciate the opportunity. Experiences and opportunities in the Air Force have been good to me. So I appreciate you allowing me a forum to share.
Yeah, this is fun. I mean, it's kind of rude on Vader just to like completely bounce out of here without even saying goodbye to anyone. But
he sent me a text.
Yeah, what a
pretty salty text.
Yeah. Again, like this Riverside's like a 95% solution. So, you know,
yeah,
it's like someone from the Air Force IT system might have developed it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was saying, it's like I was looking at it. I don't know if you guys watched the Pat McAfee show, but it was like every single time somebody comes out, I was like, Rain, you look and sound amazing. Like this is this is the way to do it. And I was like, I sat here and when you popped up, I was just like, oh, I might need to build a studio. It's like, I need this. This is awesome. You guys look amazing. I couldn't get my headphones figured out, so you probably got a lot of background noise and echo with mine. But no, this is great. And Rain, you're killing it, man. I listened to a bunch of
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.